I was a little surprised when Byron asked me, do you think, Pastor George, that there really is a devil? I said, Byron, you're 73 years old. You've spent every single Sunday of your life in the church. You went to Sunday school continually, and you're still in a class now. How could you possibly ask that question? And he said, well, to be honest with you, Pastor George, I don't think I've actually ever heard anyone teach anything about him. So I'm wondering if that's just not as true as other things might be in the scriptures. I said, wow, interesting. I'm shocked, really, that we could go to church and never talk about this one. Indeed, it was kind of like that. He said, well, maybe it's because we don't want to talk about things that are negative. Maybe we don't want to give undue glory to someone who isn't worthy of any of it. Maybe that's why. I said, well, I take seriously what these words say. What is it that this evil one, this enemy of our souls, is all about? As we're in the season of Epiphany, I'm thinking about how light overcomes darkness, and like you, I watch the news every day, and I wonder sometimes. I even watched the most recent Star Wars film. How many of you have seen it? Come on. Three of you. Okay, that's great. The rest of you, get in touch with reality. There's a Star Wars film out there. It's a cultural thing. You got to see it to understand that's kind of how people think. And throughout that film, there's this evil and good, and there's always this mixing. And the idea that you come away with is there's always going to be just as much evil as good, and that's how it always is, and you've just got to learn how to play the balance. I thought, wow, how Taoist completely, but how not the way it is. God help us. What does the evil one do? Well, Peter writes in his letter to the churches many, many, many years later after this episode of Job, that the enemy comes to do three things, to steal and kill and destroy. And as I hear those words, I'm reminded that that's indeed what Job has just experienced. Kill, the death, all of his children in a freakish accident of nature, smashing their house while they were inside, crushing and killing them all. Destroyed, his wealth, gone, everything. All of his flocks, everything that he called his own that he could sell to sustain himself, gone. Stolen, his health, even that's gone. It's misery to be awake. It's misery to be alive. I'm so grateful I haven't had to walk that journey. But indeed, it's said that this is where he's at. It feels like nothing but darkness. It feels like the dark side of the force of life is completely in control of his destiny. There's no good force with him. But from this dreadful passage that none of us ever want to live in, I think there's some important words that God might have for us. The first of all, words about God himself. What kind of God lets this happen? I know a lot of my friends who aren't believers who ask this question. Why would you worship a God who doesn't seem to do anything about evil? Evil like freak accidents and unexplainable diseases that don't go away and horrific suffering by innocent people who rightfully, truly did not deserve it. They were God's own people. Well, two things about God. Very clear. One, he knows his own. Interesting that God, although he's with the angels and they are worshiping him, he's thinking about Job. Because one of the first things God says is, have you considered my servant Job? His eyes seek to and fro across the earth, looking for those whose hearts are turned toward him. Are we people whose eyes are turned toward him, or are we concerned with our flocks, our kids, our stuff, our things? The eyes of God don't miss anyone whose eyes are turned toward him, to their face. God knows who you are. He knows your name. He knows your situation. He knows your station. He knows the things that you're suffering under right now and the comforts that you're feeling right now. He's aware. He's focused on you. Even more than the things that are right in front of him in heaven. The angels have to come to present themselves but he's always aware of you. Even the evil one comes before him. And notice the question God puts to the evil one. Where do you come from? Where have you been? As if you don't even register with me. You're so insignificant. You're such a problem child. I don't even think about you anymore. How insulting. But the enemy knows he doesn't want to be noticed, because as soon as he falls in the shadow, he actually can do something. Otherwise, he is powerless. You insignificant tramp, you, Satan. And notice his response, roaming. I'm just all over the place. I'm just doing my thing, wherever, going with the flow, looking for opportunities. Mm-hmm. But God's eyes are focused on those whose hearts are turned toward him. There's hope in this. The second thing we learn is that God is always in control. Satan says, oh yeah, well, you know, you're nice to him, so of course he's going to like you. Good people are church people. But if you make him suffer, he'll curse you to your face. To my face? Really? You think so? And suddenly there's a divine wager on the table. But notice that God is in control. He says, all right, you can mess with him, but you will not kill him. You will preserve his life. That's it. In fact, in the original language, it doesn't even a command. It's just a, that's how it's going to be. Because whenever God says something, that's just how it's going to be. No command is necessary. He doesn't have to push back against the evil one. He just says, well, here's what's possible for you, and here's what's not. That's your new reality. God is in control. Even when evil things come, even when darkness descends, even when destruction, yes, stolen, destroyed, killed, God is in control. This must be kept in mind. The evil of the universe doesn't take over, and it doesn't get to arbitrarily decide anything for you or for me or for anyone else. Thank God for that. But let's consider the other characters in the story. First, there's Job, obviously. And notice Job's response. Pain and suffering comes over his body. We're told that he seats himself in ashes and is itching, scratching the itch with a broken piece of pottery. How pathetic. You see, in ancient Edom, where Job was from, he was a respected man. He had many children. He had great wealth. He had good health. All of these were the shalom, the blessing, the peace of God. And now every single one of those things is gone. Those who know him would probably have said, oh, his sin has caught up with him. His evil has finally found its way. I wonder what it was that he was hiding in his life that brought him to this, because God is just. And clearly, he's suffering. So clearly, he's done things he shouldn't have. And even though we don't know what it is, God knows what it is. And so he's living with his consequences. Because God is a parent who's just like that. If you choose evil, you're going to live it, so that must be what's going on. But Job doesn't seek to defend himself. Job doesn't understand. He doesn't lose hope. He doesn't question. He's just mourning, scraping, hoping something will change. Then there's his wife, accusing. Surely God is despising you. Can you imagine? Of course we can, her bitterness. That all the status that she had and dignity she had in the community is also gone. She can't think of anything she's done. It must be his fault. It must be that man in my life who's lying, cheating. It must be him. And now I have to suffer under his evil too. If he'd just curse God, then he'd die, and then the shame would be gone. It's tempting, isn't it, to look at those closest to us and say, you did this. You brought this on us. If you had just been a better person, I wouldn't be under this. Oh, we say it to our spouses way too often. We say it to our parents. Sometimes we say it to our children. If only you, if only you, if only you, you know, you should just take responsibility for your choices. How quickly we turn the mirror away from ourselves. Then there's his friends. True friends. Someone said to me once, if you can find two really true friends in your lifetime, you are a blessed person. Because true friends are hard to come by. Usually people are friends for a season, or for the good times, or for your interests. But after that, not so much. But these three, they hear of it. They recognize all that Job is going through, and they decide they're going to take it another step further, showing themselves true friends. They will come to him. And when they see him, he is so pathetic, they don't even recognize him. Oh, they feel their hearts sink. Has it ever happened to you? You've seen someone you've missed and loved, and they've changed, and you see the loss in their eyes. You see the suffering and what's become of them, and your heart sinks. Because you see how low they've become, and you grieve. But like true friends, not just in ancient times, but even today, they draw near, and they sit. They sit next to him. And not just for a while, the perfect number, 7 days, 7 nights. Not to accuse, not to give advice, not even to say, I'm so sorry, you don't deserve this. Just presence. Sometimes when people are suffering, counselors tell us this is the wisest thing we can do. Just be present. Don't explain. Don't try and divert their mind. Don't try and tell them how you're feeling. Don't relate your experiences. Just shut up. Just sit there. Just bring peaceful, comforting, supportive presence. That's all you got to do. And even in the midst of Job's deep suffering, the ministry of comforting presence is available to him. Sometimes in our loss, things get very dark. Maybe these are the three responses we naturally want to make. We just scrape ourselves. Woe is me. If only. And it's like a broken piece of pottery, and we play in our minds how much it hurts and why is this happening, and oh, how God is scraping me. Oh, how it hurts. Why does this have to happen? Or sometimes we accept the words of others who say, what is your problem? Why can't you fix yourself? When are you going to get it together? Look at how you're destroying everything. You idiot. And then thirdly, there's those who just bring presence and comfort. Oh, I think the experience of Job and his wife and his friends is one that plays out over and over and over and over again. And sometimes we see the enemy at work behind it, and sometimes we have no clue. But the reality is, suffering comes. Loss is a part of life on this earth. From the day that sin first entered and by it gave birth to death, as we just heard James read from this space. Indeed, sin gives birth to death, and death has been vexing our word ever since. Maybe the way in which we bring light into the darkness has everything to do with the example that's set in this story. What about you? What's been your greatest loss? Think about the moment in your life that was the lowest point. When you lost that family member, that security, that job, that hope. Maybe it was a dream for the future that you suddenly realized was never going to come true. Not for you. When we cross these moments in life, we're invited to either get our eyes focused on ourselves or the people who made it happen or the others around us, and we don't keep our eyes focused on God. I think it'd be a good thing for us today to respond in a way that God would have us respond to these things. Think about the moment, that season, I hope it wasn't long, when you experienced the most horrific loss of your life. Thankfully, you've been brought through it. Maybe you're still in it right now. But God is present, and He's in control. And He's placed people around you, even in this very room, who are ready to listen and wait and care. I think we should do this now. What I'd like you to do is to remember your greatest loss. Bring it up in your mind, even if there's still some remnants, fragments of potsherd pain attached to it. I want you to find someone else in the room, one other person, who's of your same gender, men to men, women to women, and I want you to just share briefly that loss. And your listening partner will just listen, because they need to know more about your life and how God has brought you through, even if it's in a dark time still in this moment. And then when they're done, then you share and let your listening partner listen to you. Tell about that greatest loss. Wonder if perhaps the enemy of our souls was behind it, or if it was simply a lesson and a result of our consequences. No judgments, no opinions, just listening. And then after you've had some moments to do that, we're going to sing a song about trusting in God, and that will gather us together. And after we sing the song, we're going to pray. And if you want to ask for God's help to intervene for you in this dark season you're in, I'm going to ask you to come forward and we'll pray specifically for you. Not details, just God's mercy to you. So, find a partner, listen, share, sing, and then we'll pray as a church family. Go ahead and find that person now.